The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Take a Stock. It is Wednesday. It's the 9th of August, 2023. And John's here. You're right, John.
Not too bad. How you doing?
What's happened to your tidy shirt and stuff? You know, you used to make an effort.
It's cold. This is a nice jumper. This is cashmere.
Right, David. There was a time, John, you used to make an effort here and dress up a little bit
from your
penthouse flat in London. Okay, so today we did talk about diversification yesterday very much. And of course, you can have lots of stocks, but you can have many, many stocks and then one big holding, which should like outweigh everything else that happens. And I thought I wouldn't mind asking, you know, what people exposure to one stock? What percentage exposure do you have? What's the biggest percentage exposure you have to one stock? And please, on Vox Podcast Twitter there, I've just put a survey as well. But here are the options, if I can find it. So what percentage of your total portfolio value does your biggest investment take up? Less than 10%, 10 to 30%, 30 to 50%, or greater than 50%. John, what about yours? I'm talking about individual stocks, of course, and we've had a few comments from yesterday talking about diversification, which I think sort of makes sense. Your biggest holding, what percentage would you say of your total portfolio value does it make up?
Probably about 60%, and it's cash.
Okay, all right. Very clever. Yes, that's good. And so you're losing about 7% of a year on that.
No, because
well, the value of everything else is going up.
It's in a SIP, so okay. I can't touch it. I can't spend it. But the stock market is not inflationary in the way that the rest of the economy is.
Okay. So yesterday I had Stephen say, if you have 15 stocks, you will have three favorites. So three is all I need. It is true, actually. I mean, to a certain extent, we do have this diversification sometimes built into us, and we tend to diversify for the sake of it. And sometimes we know in your portfolio, there are a couple of stocks that you have, you know, a higher level of conviction on, and you think, I know that's going to do well. So then why have these other, okay, sometimes you get a surprise one doing really well, but sometimes your conviction goes, you know, in line with how much research you've done, and whether you know it's a good punt. Sometimes you just be blind on certain stocks. There are people on Twitter who've been talking about the same stock for 10 years, and it's not gone anywhere, and I think you've got to let it go, don't fall in love with the stock.
There is an argument that if you have a really concentrated conviction bet and you're comfortable, if you are more highly exposed to that than anything else, then you know, if it goes the right way, you know you're going to really reap the rewards from that. So whereas if you're spread thinly and you know you've only put a small amount of your portfolio in something you really believe in, then you know, even if it does fantastically well, it ain't going to, you know, do much for your portfolio. So, conviction is definitely something that isn't to be scoffed at.
Yeah, there's one yesterday, I think, it was taking up your point and disagreeing with your point, John, about you saying, do the research, invest, then don't tinker. But Casino Kid 21... that says a lot about AIM. But it, obviously, his name is going against what he's saying, his sentiment. She said, in my opinion, serious investors need to do their research before they buy. And importantly, whilst they still hold the share, nothing stays the same forever. That is true.
That is true.
You can often get companies doing very well. All of a sudden, they come up with one bad trade update and things come in threes generally. So you get another one. And before you know it, you're like 50% down on a stock you really enjoyed. William says, it's not so much how many stocks, but the degree of correlation between them. You can have 50 stocks and not be diversified if they're all similar. Having said that, I prefer a diversified portfolio of around 30 stocks, but I pick ones that are reasonably safe and don't need too much monitoring. There's a lot of machismo, especially from America, about how you need a few stocks. Whilst this may work in a bull market, if one of these three stocks you hold blows up after a profit warning, your portfolio will take a hit, of course. I prefer to hold a good number and sleep better at night. I would say, William, I sort of agree, 30 is too much. You're not going to make any gain that's worth. If you want 30, just get rid of half of them, because they're all cracking stocks. Some of them are rubbish and dogs, and you're just holding on to them. So get rid of the rubbish ones, buy a fund with that, and you diversify that across thousands of stocks or hundreds of stocks, and then concentrate on the ones you really have conviction in. And also, you can't have 50 stocks that are correlated, really, in a similar industry.
How can you
buy 50 defense stocks? Or
you could have 50 defense, 50 cyclicals. I mean, I think that's a very fair point. You know, if you've got...
I think, William, you're being too sensible. If you want to make money in the stock market, you've got to take a bit of a risk.
I like sensible William. I like sensible. No, I think you should. You know, being correlated like that is something you do need to watch out for. It's particularly true, I have to say, of investments via funds. You know, so. You know, if you're investing via funds or investment trusts, that's where you have to be very careful that the funds and trusts that you hold are not essentially giving you the same exposures. That's where it becomes more.
Yeah. That's why I find big stocks boring. That's why I have a fund covering big stocks, pretty much dividend payers. And then I like to go in this micro nano cap space for excitement, for gains. Do you know the best gain I ever made starting out? Right, and I did have sleepless nights. Was Lloyd's. I put all my money into Lloyd's after the financial crash, and I put all my money into it. And I even tried to scrape around for more money. The best, one of the best gains ever made.
Yeah, when it was a penny share.
But basically, I mean, thing is, if you don't take on a bit of risk, I did have sleepless nights. I woke up sweating sometimes thinking I'd lost it all. But I made, that could be a good starter pot. And then I started to diversify a bit then. But I just thought, it's an extreme situation, the great financial crash. I thought, Royal Bank of Scotland have been taken over by the government, and that they won't take Lloyd's over as well. And there's rumours of it. Literally, I was waking up sweating, thinking, "Oh, they're going to nationalise it." And but it did really well. I did three or four times my money, and I was relatively. I got all my money into it. So, put all your money into your riskiest stock. Go for it, guys. I'm only kidding.
Yeah, thanks.
No, I'm only kidding.
But you wouldn't have been. You wouldn't have wanted to be holding Italian banks yesterday. That's
no,
for sure.
Italian. Well, so what happened there? Explain just quickly. I mean, I'm not really interested in the Italian banking scene, to be honest. But I mean,
it's a windfall tax. Windfall tax, basically.
Yeah,
okay. Big windfall tax, and not the shares for six. I think the government there's backtracked a little bit. But really, you know, this is it's sort of populist, isn't it? I mean, you know, Giorgia Meloni is arguably a populist, and arguably, you know. Not sort of a corporate stooge that many politicians are accused of being, and really it's sort of designed to force their hand to actually give some of the sort of profits back on interest rate rises.
Listen, this is where this is Lloyd's 2009. I was buying down here and going down here, and it went up. And it went up to sort of 70, I think 80 pence there. And so I sort of double, triple the money there. So I was averaging down a lot. But I mean, it paid off in the end. But listen, someone by all means, hit subscribe there. And don't forget to comment. Michael says, we are looking at that. Given your love of things EV this week, Volex today, RNS link with Tesla, VLX supply charging cables. So you'd be, he says the F word there, without one. Pity no financials mentioned in the RNS. Have you looked at this, John?
Very briefly, but I agree with that. There's not a lot of detail in the statement. But, I guess people would love to see the name Tesla in relation to an update from a company like Volex. Volex is actually now quite a big company. 560 million market cap. I must admit, I was sceptical of this company a few years back. But, they really do seem to have done a cracking job of delivering and delivering large contracts. And, this is another piece of good news. Lots of momentum business.
Yeah, do you know what? I remembered some news about this a while back. And I thought, hang on a sec. Didn't the director buy a while back? I thought, because I saw it mentioned. I thought, and I scrolled down. I thought, where's the AGM, Prime Director shareholding on the 19th of July? Less than a month since the Tesla contract came out. I thought, here's a director. And I thought, I'd submit. And I thought, oh, I'm going to say. And it wasn't. It basically had been awarded shares in the capital for his annual bonus.
It's what they often are.
Yeah, Nats Rothschild. He now owns 25% of the company, pretty much.
It's interesting. I mean, it's just looking at these numbers, and I hope they're right after yesterday's slight hiccup with the Ondo figures on my data provider.
Can I just tell you, John, we had Alistair come back at us for that. He's a big shareholder in Ondo, and I found this. Do you know what? If I'm overexposed to a company, I get really defensive about anyone saying anything negative about it. That's part of the reason why you shouldn't be overexposed, because you don't see things with, almost like, emotional unbiased. You are quite emotionally attached to it. And once you start getting emotionally attached to the story, even negative stories or negative, I'm not talking about any company, you will spin in your head. You'll have, confirmation bias on everything. And that's the trouble, if you have too much exposure to a company, I find. So that's one of the reasons.
That's true. I mean, he was right. I mean, the numbers I was looking at on my data provider were wrong.
Yeah, but hang on, I went through the numbers last week, and I corrected you yesterday, so we didn't know the numbers. 2.4 million over 18 months, we know that.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers I was looking at related to the sort of February 22 year end, there aren't any updated on the system. I find it very strange. This is you know, data, these aggregated data providers is where I, you know, do my screening, first port of call. So, I mean, I don't know whose responsibility is that, but, you know, data is really hard. And often you'll find holes in data, and this was one of them. And unfortunately, it was live on air. So there you go.
What I would say, though, I did knock these data sources we look at, but TradingView, like I say, is the biggest charting platform in the world. And there's very few small micro nanocap stocks that don't have their data. And Ondo is one of them they don't have. So then, you know, they are an anomaly. Normally, they have all the data, even the nanocaps they have. So, But on Ondo, by the way, they come up with lots of news, but I'm not sure it's quite significant financially, but it's good news anyway. Company to introduce a Southern Water Agreement. So, you know, this is good because they're done with Portsmouth as well. So it's good news because, you know, it's a massive problem of water leaks and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's water news in the paper, isn't there? But the water comes being fined for sewage outlets. I do find that disgusting.
The whole industry is in a bit of a pickle. So they're in a good spot, and you know, so we did correct Sam.
Yeah, I did correct it.
And I would encourage whoever is in charge of getting forecasts and data out to the market, and encourage shareholders to get that one up to date. This is a company that is growing rapidly, and you know, the data needs to be correct. Just going back to Volex very quickly, you know, this is a 730 million turnover company now. Mm-hmm. In 2023, making a good old profit on that. This is really impressive, and a deal with Tesla just sort of carries on the progress there.
That's nice. Why did it rise? It's risen for 2-3 days before that news.
Now, well, you know, we'll just not talk about that.
Yeah, I know exactly. Okay, let's go to the front page of Vox here. Colfax achieves FY23 sales growth. What do Colfax do?
Wallpaper, home furnishings. Oh, okay. It's funny how companies report in clusters because we had Sanderson yesterday.
Well, they tend to have the year ends the same, don't they? I mean, leisure companies tend, in fact, XP Factor just changed their year end because it fits in with other leisure companies, which is March now, because they can record the busy sort of period of Christmas and all that stuff. And so it makes sense, I suppose. Year ends, that's very little volume in that share because you can see the bittiness of the chart, and that's what informs the share price movement. So,
It's an interesting little sector. I mean, you know, you would. It sort of belies the cost of living crisis that you know we hear so much about. That you know, I mean, the shares are down a bit today, but the numbers are quite decent. You know, very very strong comparatives last year. But you know, both Sanderson and Colfax are trading really well, and so, you know, Sanderson particularly, and a lot of that's coming to, you know, really nice licensing deals with companies like Next and Sainsbury's, really really strong over in the US. You know, looking at Colfax, it's really, really good performances in Europe. It's having really strong performances in fabric, as you can see there.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think these sort of high-end furnishing companies have proven fairly resilient, I have to say, to the broader cost of living crisis. I mean, it's, another nice update. You know, as profits are down, but against some very strong comparatives.
Yeah.
I have to say, I know Sanderson a bit better. It came out of one of our stock screens, and it's a company I like. It's a company I like a lot.
Let's just quickly at most followed company, Blue Jay Mining. I don't know if there's news out today. It was there, but they've had a sort of board shuffle and changed around, but there's no real news out. But that's most followed. Let's have a look at the chart quickly, because I know this has come off from a mighty. They've done a deal with Rio Tinto and all that stuff on there. So, yeah, look at that. It's come down from literally 12 pence a share to 1.3 pence.
Oof.
I quite like charts of that, though, because when they turn, it's like, you know, we see a lot of these resource companies, and Bushveld's one, who else? Blue Jay's another one, where they've, you know, they've had a lot of hype in them. Look at that double top up there. A lot of hype in them, and they've come off massively. The hype doesn't go away. It dissipates a little bit. But once the hype turns, you'll find a rise can happen quickly. And so it's almost like worth putting alert on that. And in fact, if you can see that, you can probably put it on 50-day moving average. What else is most followed? Turn is a bit of Atlantic Lithium. In fact, Did you see it? I think the same directors here bought some more shares. I spoke to Neil yesterday on the podcast, and he was saying that there's a new green sort of policy being announced in Ghana there, and he says he doesn't see it as a delay to his to the mining license being issued, or as a big hit. He said, you know, governments change their taxing policies all the time and how much they're going to get, but they have to make it, you know, affordable and profitable for companies to mine there. Otherwise, it'll kill the industry. So they said that margin's going to be very good. So, you know, it won't be a problem, but it's just the uncertainty of the lack of detail on what the Ghana said so far. Ghana government has said is the reason why it's taking a hit. But
And the sort of broader you know problems that are emerging in East Africa. Oh, sorry, West Africa. It's you know there is bound to be nervousness given what's going on in that region.
They bought 84 grand, 85 grand for the shares, and this is on top of about 400 grand's worth when that's their partner Piedmont was a short selling note came out on it.
Yeah.
It dropped, and they bought a lot of shares here as well. So they're definitely putting their money where their mouth are. So
it's good. So you want to see skin in the game?
Yeah, Pelarian, right? Look at Pelarian, because it's just quite annoying. Pelarian should have been. It was one of the stars of the stock market. I started investing in Pelarian. I love their tech. Like I said, they've got technology where you can see lungs basically to a greater detail than current standard care or MRIs provide, and you could pick up COVID and all that stuff. And I started investing in it down here about 17 pence. They did really well, and all of a sudden FDA approval knocked back. And since then, it's been a nightmare. Like I said, you can see almost like if you look at this box here, support and resistance pretty much, and it's broke down there, broke down again, and now it's broken down again. And you've got Amati, which is their biggest shareholder, reducing their holding. They've gone down from 11.9 to 10.9. Of course, Richard, the old CEO, is gone. There's a new guy called Chris von Jacko in there. But not much news from them, really. So it's a really, it's one, I don't know, what's the lesson here, I suppose? You know, just because you've got cutting edge tech.
The lesson in anything that requires, you know, regulatory approval, particularly in the healthcare space, is that, you reach a point where it becomes a binary bet. You know, and this is a very good example of where you should be very cautious in the level of exposure you have to companies that are, you know, I mean, it's a bit unfair to say it's a coin toss, but you know, that's what it is. That's what it is in a sense.
Do you know what? I always update. I have a sort of, you know, investing sort of principles, rules. It's easy to make them, and we can all make them, and they can be brilliant rules, and they can be spot on rules. It's actually sticking to them that's the point. It's the emotional character of humans. But one of the rules I had was I'll never invest in a company now that have a binary outcome or binary decision in the hands of a regulator, and because you never know how it's going to go. I mean, the chart they did two phase threes that passed successfully, and yet so it was nailed on. They're going to get FDA approval. There's unmet medical need there for, and yet they're knocked back by the FDA because they changed the manufacturer of their kit apparently, and the FDA wants to see more detail. But again, exactly. That's been knocked.
Why would they do that?
This other manufacturer wasn't going to be doing that kind of thing anymore, so that it changed it. But the thing is, it was the exact same specification, because it's engineering, isn't it? You know, it's all numbers. You just give them the same specifications they created. So they say it hasn't changed. The exact same machine is being made by a different manufacturer, but the FDA weren't happy with that.
Yeah,
apparently that's what happened.
It also the lesson for me. I mean, it goes back to something I've said before, is that, you know, I've generally been very wary of the healthcare space, the drug discovery space, because of these binary outcomes. But I do have exposure to healthcare through hVIVO, and it's because essentially this risk doesn't exist for them. So
picks and shovels.
Picks and shovels.
Boring. Casino Kids said, "What about Moody's credit downgrade of US banks yesterday? Was it yesterday?
You're thinking about Fitch and the
Fitch was last week.
US government
chopping Americans' rating from AAA to AA. Is this a trend and something to watch? It shook investor sentiment. Yeah, it's happening again, isn't it? But I mean, again, you know, if everyone's debt, it's going to. If you think about it, if everyone's debts get downgraded, it gets more expensive, then less people are going to borrow. That'll help with inflation. There's always an upside. But because it becomes more expensive. Speaking of charts, this is from Old Dog 71. What's your thoughts on Fab, Justin? We did look at this on charts, but I know. Let's have a look at the. I want to do a feature. John doesn't want to do it. Let me know if you think. I want to do a chart trade of the day. John thinks it's topical stuff. And I think I just hope one up. That chart there, I'd say flatlining, which is not bad because it's got support there. But you want to see some upward momentum. And you may see, like I said, I put a line in there, recent high. If it breaks it, breaks that, maybe it's going to go. But I don't see, let's look at the RSI is picking up. No, it's dipping down. You want to see an RSI, look at this, you know, almost getting above 50, 60, the strength there to pick it up a little bit and the momentum going. So as yet, there's no real movement in that. But but what are you considering doing, John, do a paper trade of the day and seeing how it goes, how trading on charts work to see if what versus investing can
I see why not. I don't see why not. But as I say, my view would be let's do it on something that's in the news. This is okay, all right. This is all a topical show.
All right. Yeah, yeah. Okay. Any other content worth looking at on the front page there, John?
Well, I quite like Inspired Energy. This is a nice little company. They're a consultancy to all intents and purposes that essentially help businesses it's INSE the ticker essentially helps businesses manage the energy transition, so it's helping them, you know, be more efficient in their utility usage, whether that's energy or water, or sort of meet ESG reporting criteria, which is becoming, you know, ever more stringent for listed companies, and almost a sort of hygiene factor for institution investors in companies. So yeah, it's in a good spot. I mean, the stat that struck me was that they work with 2,900 companies that actually are UK businesses that use between them 6.5% of the UK's electricity. You know, it's quite a significant, market presence here, and they're using sort of technology and data to underpin all this. So yes, yeah, it's quite a nice little company. I would say somewhat below the radar. Inspired PLC now. It used to be called Inspired Energy. Nice little company.
Just looking at the results there. Sorry, they're saying that given this half year performance, the momentum continues. The board remains confident delivering market consensus for the full year. And market consensus is down here. Company consensus forecast be the revenue of £110.5 million, adjusted EBITDA of £24.2 million.
I mean, you know how I love the adjusted EBITDA metric.
Oh, I know.
That's a question I would happily discuss at length, perhaps that's one for another show. But yeah, I mean, the top line's growing here. Pre-tax profit's been a bit bouncy. And that's
half like to, year, 110 million and 24 million. So if you're going to double
110 million is going to be for your full year, but that's up from 89 last year. So, you know, an adjusted EBITDA, I've actually got that figure. I mean, EBITDA last year was 5.5. So you know, this
it's
is
24. It's a big upgrade from that, yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the adjustment is. I need to have a look at further detail. What's straight EBITDA? What's straight pre-tax is what I'd really like to know.
It's almost the norm now. When I do spreadsheets, literally, I don't use adjusted. I use what it says: earnings before, interest, depreciation, amortization, and that's it.
I'm not
adjustments, and you see what the actual EBITDA is.
I'm not a fan of adjustments.
It's harder to find actual, you know, clean EBITDA now rather than adjusted. You know, everything's adjusted, and you get because I'm not talking about Inspired. Every company does. It's a standard, seems now, because you've got one-off costs. I'd be surprised how many one-off costs happen on a yearly basis. Every year they happen. So literally, there we are.
Yeah,
so,
and I don't know if there's any significant one-off costs here. But just looking at the adjusted PBT line, I think an adjusted PBT is sometimes fair. But yeah, this is from Shawcap with their house broker. Going from 13.4 in 21, 14 in 22, their actuals, and then 17.2 this coming year. So, you know, moving in the right direction. I guess the big worry for this business is that there is a fair amount of debt in there.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a debt because it's not acting like... do you know what? I'm not joking. If you read enough stuff and you look at charts, you can almost sense a company's got EBITDA just by the valuation, even by looking at the balance sheet. Okay, so...
But cheap anyway, less than 7x forecast earnings, this one.
Blue Star Capital, they've been quiet for a bit, really. But the chart is, this is one of those companies that can have a massive spike up on news. Like I said, when you know, esports was hot. In fact, Gfinity's come up with some news. I used to hold Gfinity. I literally multiplied my initial investment on that, and then lost money in the end. And that was a really bad performance on my behalf. You should never lose money if you're up significantly in a share, yeah, ever. And I think that one of the biggest goals you can ever get in life is a risk-free investment.
Top slice, Sachin. Top slice.
No, but even failing that, right? A risk-free investment is the perfect scenario because every investment has risk and reward. If the share price rises significantly and you put a stop loss in above your buy-in price, that no longer holds any risk to you. It's only upside. That's only a reward for investment. So you take away the risk of the equation. I should have done that. I didn't. I lost money on Gfinity, having been like 200-300% up. It's ridiculous, really. But anyway, this is Blue Capital. So what they announced, Googly.
They're working, they're doing something with the Caribbean Premier League Cricket. Okay. It's a sort of an e-sports accompaniment to the live tournament, and this is a growing trend in this industry. Gfinity, I think, you know, they've struggled in this e-sports, but it is a growing business, industry.
Yeah, they started going in the right direction. What Gfinity had, three parts of the business, really, but they had media, which is based around gaming, so they published articles and stuff, and then they used to host e-sports events. Very chunky revenues, but no margin in it. And so they started to wind that down, and so they had this Athlos gaming platform that they use for companies, software as a service. That's costing money, so spun that out. And a guy involved in buying that from them is now coming onto the board. They've just announced, in fact, what's quite interesting, actually, John, we say we should do a bit on AI. But of course, a lot of the content they do, and in fact, scrolling down here, they did say they've got 10 million current trading. So, 4.7 million is 75%. Let me just find the things here. But they do say they're going to hit. They hope to hit sort of EBITDA, sort of break even. You know, directors are targeting cash break even and attracting a monthly audience of 10 million monthly active users over the next 6 months. So these are people visiting their websites, gaming sites, all that stuff, advertising based model. But they say Gfinity has invested extensively in its tech content platform and more recently in deploying artificial intelligence. Essentially, what I see by that is they've sacked a lot of writers and they're getting one writer to write some stuff and putting it into ChatGPT, and it's an easy way to do it. That's the way it's going, isn't it? Let's be honest, you write an article and put it in chat. Anyway.
AI will have a profound effect on lots of businesses.
Can I say one thing? But Future PLC, for example, is almost the model that this Gfinity Media was built on. Now, Future has taken a massive hit because of the worries about AI and advertising spend. But I think AI will be a benefit to Future. I think they can cut back on loads of writers and chat. They have chat bots on there and everything. So possibly, AI is a benefit to them. Yeah,
possibly. But then surely other people. Is it a zero sum game? If they can do it, then so can other people. If you're trying to sell high quality subscription content, do you really want that being written by robots? Is it good enough to do that?
Yeah, exactly. Just depending from, you've got to have the money to invest into it. And I suppose the more you have to invest in it, the more sophisticated the AI model will be and the more users you have. But this is what they say, combined with more effective use of ad tech to boost CPM rates. Now, if they're doing that, you can guarantee Future's doing that. And direct advertising, the board believes it can create a market leader in the gaming digital media space. Okay, but you've got, they're raising 450 grand. They're just thinking, How long will that last?
AI is really interesting. There's lots of companies that are potentially doing it really well. We've spoken about it before. Interestingly, I was reading Barron's, which is a big, basically the US equivalent of the Investors Chronicle. And they were talking about a company called Chegg, which provides sort of student textbooks and that sort of thing for education. Yeah. And they got thumped a little while back because they basically said all the students were using ChatGPT to help them with their homework. For every business it benefits, there are others that will suffer, and it's just hard to say at the moment. It's like we're gonna look at this in detail.
I think it's like people have gone from not knowing where it is, taking over everything, to realizing, in fact, companies that have thought they're going to be affected by it could benefit. And I do see advertising and all that could do quite well from it. Just more targeted, like Chief, as you said there, you know, more targeted CPM rates improving. Anyway, they're one of the fallers, as is Abtima Group. Also, RM Group. Have you looked at those, Don? Because, in fact,
I've been around for donkey's years. I haven't looked at them for a while. I mean, it was basically computers for schools, wasn't it?
Yeah. And they said down 28% a day. And I did look at their updates, and they are restructuring. And the thing is, what I couldn't understand is what was so negative about it. I mean, there was a bit of negativity. I haven't really looked into the detail here, but
I haven't.
I went through it. There was a lot of positivity. In fact, you know, we haven't got the thing here, but where is it? Financial highlights. So statutory profit up to 6.8 million, reflecting low costs. There's net debt there, 52 million. They do say current trading outlook, as a result of the turnaround actions which have taken place, we would expect to start to see the results come through in our revenue growth for the business the second half of the year. So you get this falling off now on, you know, historical results. But looking forward, the outlook, we now expect to deliver adjusted operating profit or break even full year in excess of 10 million of identified annual cost saving. So are they, you know, on the turn here? And if they are, but, you know, it always takes longer than you think, doesn't it? That's what I always realise. A turnaround always takes longer than you think. You know, you think it's going to happen. In fact, maybe people are thinking it's going to happen here. Yeah. Like it's risen, done quite nicely since November. And all of a sudden, boom.
Yeah, it's a funny old business. You know, it's been through the wars many, many times.
Yeah.
You know, not one I would be rushing to get exposure to.
Yeah. Okay. Any other companies you want to look at, John? Anything you want? Okay. In fact, another one interesting, actually, raising money, which I didn't think they did raise money, is Velocity Composites. And they've, of course, got this big contract. They're a microcap stock. And let's look at the market cap on them. They are 15 million. Of course, they announced a contract with GKN for 100 million. So the building's sort of, what is it, bits of planes and stuff, the composites for planes.
Yeah.
But then I was placing a subscription today of 6.2 million, probably half a million for retail. So they come off a bit, but that was, you know, the chart went up there. That was the gap up in the news on this GKN contract, but it's come back down to that, where that gap was. Look,
yeah, we spoke about this. I mean, when you get a contract of that scale, you need working capital to deliver it. So I, you know, this is what this is, and actually to get it away without too much damage to the share price is not too bad at all. So definitely a good job there by the brokers. Good to see them getting retail involved through Rex. With that sort of cash, then, you know, they can really start to pull that, you know, to make sure they deliver, you know, that big, huge, game changing contract properly.
So look at this. I mean, I did see some, we did sort of cover it yesterday about China deflation. You know, it's quite worrying what's happening in China at the moment. And of course, they that's why commodities and all that taking a bit of a hit. But because one in five, you know, people, youth are unemployed. Something like that's ridiculous. Yes. But they're importing export. But this is the news I picked up on this morning, right? And this story, look at the story. This is from the BBC, lost economic growth, 5 years. This is from Sky, at risk of recession. And this is from inflation. This is exactly the same story, pretty much, from the economic and social research think tank. But this is a spin. So BBC have gone with lost economic growth, they were the poorest hit, 5 years. Sky have gone a bit more sensationalist, at risk of recession next year. They've gone for the big one there, Sky. It's all based on the same figures. And then CTAM have pulled out inflation to remain above Bank of England's target until 2025, and they reckon they'll get back on track. So they're by the end of this year, inflation will be at 3.9%, and then it'll be around about 2.3% 2025.
Yeah, that's 3.9 by the end of 2024. I really think this is likely to be the surprise that the market isn't accounting for, that actually inflation is likely to remain elevated and volatile for a little bit longer than we expected. The good news is that, you know, as it drops to that level, at least inflation is below interest rates. And that's really what I suspect will be the catalyst for some sort of, you know, market improvement, some economic improvement.
Yeah.
Inflation has to fall below interest rates.
Yeah. And the worrying thing is, right now, we've had energy prices come off, which has helped a lot, and also all the inputs. This isn't that gas, right? As you can see there, it's starting to rise to that upper level on the resistance. Now, if we get gas prices and oil prices going back up, that's going to be slightly worrying, isn't it?
But this is what we'll see this volatility now.
If it breaks above that.
You know, I was looking at, there's, I can't remember which one, I think it's Ruffer, an investment trust. Mm-hmm. And they specialise in capital preservation. So, you know, that's for those people who are fearful and want, you know, to make sure that their cash isn't whittled away, either by inflation or by market falls. Their strategy is to basically keep it safe. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the things that they've focused on quite strongly is that, you know, the problem is not inflation per se, but it's inflation bouncing around, because it's very hard to position when things are moving that quickly, when volatility, yeah, when inflation volatility is what it is. So that's the thing I think we need to watch out for, you know, and I think that's why calling the end, calling, you know, the start of things changing is really difficult at the moment, because volatility is what we are facing.
Yeah. And inflation takes a long time. By the way, we didn't cover the loser, but just quickly following off on the winners. The reason why we look at the winners is because why I look at the winners, people often ask me, how you research companies? I tend to look at winners, right? And I see what the news is and whether it's significant and whether they're a good value. And you always find, you know, after the initial rise of good news, they normally come back a little bit. So you've got plenty of time to do research. Don't jump on it today, unless you're a day trader, you want to jump in and make 10, 20%. But this is an Codex. Have you seen the Codex here?
No, I haven't looked at that.
But basically, there's a special acquisition vehicle, special purpose. They are literally less than 900 grand. But restoration of listing, right? Then he started in, they listed in October. Obviously, the final report didn't get through, but restoration of listing. So, but anyway, they are, what's it called? If you look here, they are a special acquisition with targets in the clean and renewable energy sector. But that's one of the biggest rises, just because it's been restored today. Was there any other news?
Entech is the one that jumps out at me, actually. Yeah.
Sabre system field trial update.
Yeah, it's so nice.
Do you know what this means?
It's basically sort of advanced directional drilling technology. So you know, it's fracking technology, basically. But I think the advantage of their technology is that it can operate at much higher temperatures. So that's a huge jump. The thing that surprised me when I went away and thought I'll have a little dig into that one, because it looks interesting. This company is doing some serious revenues already, you know. So, you know, you think a move like that is coming with a company that's really, you know, it's got a bit of technology, isn't established. But this company's doing $7.5 million in revenues already, dollars, that is. It's virtually profitable. So looking at SharePad, and again, you know, I hope it's right, but profit for the financial year, post-tax profit, was
operating loss,
800K, which is, for a company of that size, with a technology that's potentially transformational on revenues that are, you know, pretty strong. And it's certainly bouncing back from the 21 level when they fell quite sharply from the year before. This is a decent looking business.
I just wondered if they had any debt there. They don't seem to have any debt.
I don't think they do. I think looking at the balance sheet, they got $300 million of cash at the end of last year. So, yeah, funny one, this.
Okay, so what's the $3.5 million of cash? They are $7 million market cap even after today's rise. So maybe worth a look, yeah.
I think so.
Add that to my watch list of nanocap stocks, and in future I'll get a notification via Voxer's app. Marvellous stuff. Thanks everyone for watching. That's it for the day. Take a stock, and I'll try and convince John to do a chart trade of the day. But
it's just got to be a company in the news.
Okay. All right. Marvellous. Speak tomorrow. Hit that subscribe button. Cheers. Thank you very much.
See you later.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.